Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Susan Shand, Brian Lynn, and Alice Bryant. Later, Steve Ember will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Susan Shand.
U.S. President Donald Trump says his North Korea policy is doing great. South Korean President Moon Jae-in says talks with North Korea are making progress. Yet, the North's government seems to disagree about the direction of nuclear talks with South Korea and the United States. North Korea's foreign ministry Thursday criticized the two countries and said it could completely pull out of the talks. The Korean Central News Agency reported the ministry's statement. It added there is no guarantee negotiations would restart. The news agency noted North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's demand that the United States change the way it negotiates. He wants a new U.S. approach to the talks by the end of the year. Our repeated warning is not an empty word, said Kwon Jong-gun. He is Director General of the Department of American Affairs at the North Korean Foreign Ministry. The comments are evidence of the differences between the appeasing language used by U.S. officials and the aggressive language used by North Korea. The nuclear talks have been on hold since the February summit of Kim and Trump in Vietnam. That meeting ended without an agreement. Kim was unhappy with the U.S. government's slow easing of sanctions against North Korea. Trump was unhappy that Kim would not agree to completely give up his country's nuclear program. Since then, North Korea has ignored U.S. requests to restart lower-level talks. The two leaders recently exchanged personal letters. Trump called the letters beautiful, while Kim said he was seriously thinking about their interesting content. South Korea's Moon announced Wednesday the United States and North Korea are involved in behind-the-scenes talks on a third Trump-Kim meeting. He also suggested North and South Korean officials are holding meetings. But the North Korean Foreign Ministry on Thursday denied there were any talks with the South Korean government. It also rejected the idea of the South helping with contacts between the North and the United States. The foreign ministry said that South Korea is falsely spreading the idea that the two Koreas are in closed-door meetings. It added that South Korea should mind its own business. I'm Susan Shand.
New data shows that air quality across the United States is dropping after many years of improvement. Over the last 2 years, the U.S. had more polluted air days than just a few years earlier, official data showed. The information was collected by the Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, and examined by the Associated Press. Climate experts say it is too early to know whether the recorded drops are the beginning of a long-term situation. But health officials say it is troubling to see the changes following years of progress. In 2017 and 2018, there were 15% more unhealthy air days than in the previous 4 years, the data shows. The 2013 to 2016 period saw the fewest number of unhealthy air days the U.S. had ever had since at least 1980. Air quality is affected by a complex mix of conditions, both natural and man-made. Federal rules that limit emissions material from factories, cars, and trucks have greatly helped improve air quality over the past 20 years. But scientists say that in any given year, air quality can also be affected by natural changes. Some believe that may be causing the latest drops. Bob Persiasepi is a former EPA official who is now president of the not-for-profit Center for Climate and Energy Solutions. He says the current data does not necessarily mean the changes will be permanent. What you're seeing is a flattening off of progress as opposed to a major change in the wrong direction, he told the Associated Press. In 2018, more than 500 American cities reported days when the official air quality index passed 100, the data showed. This level means the air is unhealthy for people with heart and lung disease, as well as for older people and young children. I'm Brian Lynn.
As a general rule, the English language aims to avoid repetition. That's why, on Everyday Grammar, we talk about ways to shorten sentences in spoken English and in some forms of writing. Shortened speech helps us avoid restating what we or others have just said. For example, my sister and I just exchanged text messages that demonstrate how to say something in only a few words. I'll share our messages with you. She would like to use something of mine, so she wrote, "Hey, do you have an extra airbed? Some friends are visiting this weekend." I responded, "I think so. I'll check tonight." In my text, the word "so" shortened a longer sentence. "I think so" means, "I think that I have an extra airbed." When we use "so" this way, we are replacing a group of words known as a "that" clause. On a past Everyday Grammar program, we introduced this idea. Today, we will look at the grammar in steps. The first step is to understand what a clause is. A clause is a part of a sentence with its own subject and verb. Many sentences in English contain two or more clauses. Imagine I wrote a longer text to reply to my sister. "I think that I have an extra airbed." This sentence has two clauses, a main clause and supporting clause. The main clause is I think. Its subject is I and verb is think. The main clause is joined to a second clause that gives us more information. In this case, a that clause. That I have an extra airbed is the that clause. It begins with the word that and has its own subject and verb. Its subject is I and verb is have. Now, let's move to step two, how to replace that clauses with so. There are a few kinds of that clauses in English, and not all can be replaced with so. We mostly do it when sentences follow the structure subject plus verb plus that clause. This kind of that clause is a noun clause, but remembering that term is not important for today's lesson. We replace that clauses with so only after a limited number of verbs, including
think,
believe,
hope,
guess,
suppose,
assume,
imagine,
know,
say,
and tell.
Most of these verbs, except say and tell, can express uncertainty or an opinion. Say and tell are reporting verbs, which we can use to talk about what someone else said. All of this will become clearer in step three, hearing examples. Let's now listen to a few. I recently asked a friend if she'd won an award for small businesses in New York. Her response was something like this.
I haven't gotten an answer yet, but I really hope so.
Later, she found out that she was a winner. Our next example has a reporting verb. Notice that there's just one speaker.
I'm not sure if Alfredo's coming to the watch party. He said so, but it's after 5 p.m. and I haven't seen him.
We can shorten that clauses in our own speech, not just in responses. And this last one answers a suggestion.
Should we wait until tomorrow to go hiking?
I suppose so. It's close to sunset, so the bugs will be out now.
Okay, on to step four. I imagine this step will be a huge help as you continue studying English. When native speakers say or write things, we often leave out the word that in that clauses. In fact, I did it a few sentences ago. Did you catch it? Here's a clue. I said, I imagine. Recognizing missing that's will help you understand and write English better. Now for step five, negative forms. When we replace that clauses with so in negative sentences, we do it differently for different verbs. After the verbs think, believe, say, and some others, we make the negative this way.
I don't suppose so.
The witness didn't say so.
Rachel doesn't think so.
But after the verbs guess and hope, we form the negative without the verb do and put not at the end like this.
I guess not.
We hope not.
We do not say, I don't guess so, or we don't hope so. Wow, we covered a lot today. Don't try to remember it all. Instead, look and listen for signals of that clauses anywhere that English is used. You can start by paying attention when people use the verbs think, believe, guess, and hope in positive or negative form. Then, ask yourself if the speaker or writer used a full that clause, left out the word that, or replaced the clause completely with so. For instance, at a restaurant or market, a worker might ask a customer, "Would you like anything else today?" The customer might respond, "I don't think so, thanks." And I think we are done for today, too. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We conclude the story of the 37th President of the United States, Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon's first term ended with the hope for a complete American withdrawal from the war in Vietnam. Yet Americans were still angry about the war and its economic effects on life at home. Inflation and unemployment were both high. Some political observers thought Nixon would not win a second term. Nixon, however, was sure the American people would support him. He did not actively campaign in the state primary elections leading up to the Republican nominating convention. He focused much of his attention on foreign policy, including his historic trip to China in February 1972. In May, he traveled to Austria, the Soviet Union, Iran, and Poland. In Moscow, he signed the first Strategic Arms Limitation Treaty, or SALT, with the Soviets. But back in Washington, something happened. It was a small incident, but one that would have a huge effect. On June 17, 1972, five men wearing surgical gloves broke into the headquarters of the Democratic Party. The Democratic National Committee offices were located in one of the buildings in a complex called Watergate. Police caught the burglars, and at the time, the incident did not seem very important. But the men carried papers that linked them to top officials in the Nixon White House. The question was, did the president know what was going on? Nixon denied any wrongdoing. In time, the Watergate break-in would lead to a congressional investigation. But in the summer of 1972, attention focused on the presidential nominating conventions. Democrats met in Miami Beach, Florida, and chose George McGovern, a senator from South Dakota, as their candidate for president. The Republicans also met in Miami Beach and, as expected, nominated Richard Nixon for a second term. McGovern, a liberal, attacked Nixon for his policies on Vietnam. However, Nixon easily won the 1972 election. He defeated McGovern, carrying 49 of the 50 states. But the shadow of Watergate would not go away. Two young reporters for the Washington Post, Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein, had been following the story since the break-in. In early 1973, they found evidence that linked the break-in to White House officials. The evidence also showed that these officials tried to use government agencies to hide the connection. The burglars had been financed with money connected to the committee to re-elect the president. Pressure grew for a full investigation. In April, President Nixon ordered the Justice Department to carry it out. Attorney General Elliot Richardson appointed law professor Archibald Cox as a special prosecutor to lead the investigation.
The committee will come to Alma.
In May, a special Senate committee began its own investigation. A former White House lawyer, John Dean, provided the major evidence.
It is my honest belief that while the president was involved, that he did not realize or appreciate at any time the implications of his involvement. And I think that when the facts come out, I hope the president is forgiven.
By July, the public learned that President Nixon had made tape recordings of some of his discussions and telephone calls. The Senate committee asked him for some of the tapes. Nixon refused. He said, "The President of the United States has a constitutional right to keep such records private." A federal judge, John Sirica, ordered the president to surrender the tapes. Lawyers for the president took the case to the Supreme Court. The High Court supported Sirica's decision. After that, pressure increased for Nixon to cooperate. In October, he offered to provide written transcripts of parts of the recordings. Archibald Cox, the special prosecutor, rejected the offer. So Nixon ordered Attorney General Richardson to dismiss him. Richardson, the nation's top law enforcement officer, refused. Instead, he resigned, as did his deputy, William Ruckelshaus, when Nixon ordered him to fire Cox.
The Watergate drama has taken a half year to unfold. The president's unique actions in firing two popular and respected members of the executive branch and forcing a third to quit took less than 8 hours. The impact of all this, clearly colossal and yet to be measured.
Jerry Landay reporting for ABC News. The incident happened on a Saturday night and became known as the Saturday Night Massacre. Nixon then had Acting Attorney General Robert Bork dismiss Cox, and the president eliminated the office of special prosecutor. He gave the Justice Department the responsibility of continuing the investigation. President Nixon had another political problem in addition to Watergate. In late 1973, his vice president, Spiro Agnew, was forced to resign. A court had found Agnew guilty of violating tax laws. President Nixon asked Gerald Ford to become the new vice president. Ford was a longtime member of Congress from Michigan. By that time, some members of Congress were talking about trying to remove Nixon from office. Was the president covering up important evidence in the Watergate case? Was he, in fact, guilty of crimes? In April 1974, Nixon surrendered some of the recordings of conversations in his office. However, three important ones were missing. The Nixon administration tried to explain, saying the tape machine had failed to record two of those conversations. The third recording, it said, had been erased accidentally. This became known as the famous 18-minute gap. Many Americans did not believe these explanations. 2 months later, the Supreme Court ruled that a president cannot hold back evidence in a criminal case. It said there is no presidential right of privacy in such a case. Congress moved ahead with efforts to bring charges against the president.
Congress now has no alternative but to institute impeachment proceedings.
In July 1974, a committee in the House of Representatives proposed to impeach Nixon, that is, put the president on trial in the Senate. If Nixon were found guilty of crimes connected to the Watergate case, he would be removed from office. Finally, Nixon surrendered the last of the documents sought by congressional investigators. These documents appeared to provide proof that the president had ordered a cover-up of evidence in the Watergate burglary. Every president promises to protect and defend the Constitution. The congressional investigation showed that Nixon had repeatedly misused government agencies in an effort to hide wrongdoing and punish his critics. The hearings also showed that he had tried to block the investigation. On August 8, 1974, Richard Nixon spoke to the nation. His long struggle to remain in office was over.
Throughout the long and difficult period of Watergate, I have felt it was my duty to persevere, to make every possible effort to complete the term of office to which you elected me. In the past few days, however, it has become evident to me that I no longer have a strong enough political base in the Congress to justify continuing that effort. Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
By resigning, Nixon avoided impeachment and possible imprisonment. Never before had an American president resigned. On August 9th, Nixon's vice president, Gerald Ford, was sworn in as the nation's 38th president. Soon after becoming president, Gerald Ford made a surprise announcement.
I deeply believe in equal justice for all Americans, whatever their station or former station. But it is not the ultimate fate of Richard Nixon that most concerns me, though surely it deeply troubles every decent and every compassionate person. My concern is the immediate future of this great country.
He pardoned Richard Nixon. Many Americans criticized Ford for doing this, but the new president believed he had good reason. Ford wanted to deal with the other problems facing the nation. He did not want Watergate to go on and on, but the investigation did go on. A number of officials in the Nixon administration went to prison. The effects of Watergate on public opinion and public policy would be felt for years to come. For example, Congress passed laws designed to prevent an administration from using its power to punish opponents. Nixon's abuses also led Congress to order government agencies to provide more information about their intelligence gathering activities. Nixon's actions violated the basic trust between the American public and their elected officials. It led to more aggressive reporting by a new generation of journalists hoping to follow in the footsteps of Woodward and Bernstein. Their coverage of Watergate won a Pulitzer Prize, one of journalism's top awards, and led to a movie based on their book, All the President's Men. It starred Robert Redford as Bob Woodward and Dustin Hoffman as Carl Bernstein. Jason Robards played Washington Post executive editor Ben Bradley.
You got more than one source.
Yes, sir.
Who are they?
Sloan.
Sloan and Wells.
And there's another guy, Justice, who so far won't confirm the names of the other two who control the fund that we're working on.
What they throw.
He's not a source on this.
Look, do any of them have an axe?
No. Nope.
Personal, political, sexual? Is there anything at all on Mitchell?
No. Nope.
Can we use the names?
No.
When is somebody going to go on the record in this story?
You guys are about to write a story that says the former attorney general, the highest ranking law enforcement officer in this country, is a crook. Just be sure you're right.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.